This should be played at high volume, preferably in a residential area.
Yes! Oh, wow, I don't know why I started out like that. There's no way I can maintain that kind of energy, but out in the woods. I think, tell you what, I'm going to edit in that little tune from the Chronic. That'd make a banging little intro. Well, you'd have already heard that intro by now, so. Like a circle in a spiral, like a wheel within a wheel, never ending or beginning, on an ever spinning reel, like a snowboard down a mountain or a carnival balloon, like a carousel that's turning, running rings around the room, like a clock whose hands are sweeping past the minutes on its face. The world is like an apple spinning silently in space, like the circles that you find in the windmills of your mind. Hello. I've got the woods to myself at the moment, so I'm feeling pretty good. It's it's Friday the 13th today. Friday the 13th. You know what that means? Friday the 13th, you know? You know what that means? Fuck all. Grow up, you dummy. But oh god, yeah, I've got an absolute belter to recommend up top. Like last night, I watched a film called Birds of Package. No, a film called Birds of Passage. Pájaros de Verano, right? Bloody quality film, and I think it's a few years old, but basically it's about like this indigenous Colombian family, and it's how they get corrupted and sort of lose their traditions and stuff as they get more and more kind of like embroiled into the drug trade. It's oh man, well good mate, well bloody good. Give it a watch. So before I get into before I get too far into this, last time I cut off the first part where I got attacked by a dog. Like before the dog attack, I was talking about a phone call I'd had where this person kept saying "or" at the end of their sentences. Like some some electric tidbits content there, but I can't remember exactly what it was they were saying, but you know that thing people do. Are you coming to the pub or what? Are you gonna finish those chips or just take a chip, you mug? So annoying. But anyway, yeah. At the end, I did a little callback to that in the little outro. But of course, that bit had been chopped off at the start. So you probably thought I was genuinely saying that. So just wanted to get that straight. And. We've had two emails, guys. The first is from my friend Ashin. What a beautiful man, by the way. He looks like a next level handsome version of Eddie Redmayne. Good looking kid. Anyway, I always pronounce his name wrong. His girlfriend Aoife is easy to remember. Aoife like Queen Latifah. Aoife like Queen Latifah. Easy. But Ashin, I found it hard to make a little rhyme. I was sort of going more ushing for the pushing, and that's not quite right. It's I go up to him and go like oosh da 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 yeah da 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 da. But that didn't work either, so here we are. Sorry if I'm saying your name wrong, and I don't think I'm ever going to get it right. And the second email is from the lovely Sarah, and we used to work together, and I think she's got like my favourite laugh in the whole bloody world. Hello, Sarah. But I'm not going to read both, but they both were about travel stuff. And you know what? I'm going to fire up the old blog and read one of the posts from there. Tidballstravels.com if you want to read along yourself. They're all you know, all a few years old now. But yeah, let me load this up. I think I've got to find a place to sit as well, because I'll probably stack it if I'm reading while walking along. Rightio. So yeah, give me a minute here. I'm just going to sort of cut the tape and I'll be back in a sec.
Jack Tibble will be right back.
Oh, yeah, this is nice. So I'm on a little bench in a thicket. Well, in a little clearing in the woods. Not sure what a thicket is. But yeah, bribery and paranoia, my first brush with airport security. After a phenomenal few weeks, I was coming to the end of the garden route and had no plan. Being the plucky modern man that I am, I decided to consult my favourite internet search engine for some ideas. The Pyramids of Giza and the Sphinx, far too far away. Table Mountain, I'd just been there. Oh my God, I hate myself. Victoria Falls, perfect. Before I checked any of the logistics, my mind was already made up. Half an hour or so of messing about, moving money, checking prices and so on, and it was done. Flights to Livingston were booked one way. At the time, I preferred an early morning flight, favouring the stay up all night and pass out on the phone approach. On the phone, pass out on the plane approach. Yeah, I used to get nervous on planes, so yeah, the faster that I could get to sleep was the better, really. And really early morning flights were often cheaper as well, so everyone's a winner. Cut to the morning of the journey, I'd misjudged it. I woke up panicked and disorientated in a chair after an unintentional 2-hour sleep in a spitefully comfortable comfortable hot windowless room. Oh crap, I've missed my flight. I hadn't, but time was short. I quickly bundled together my things and shot out of the door. I'd intended to have a nice shower before I left, but now my plans were out of the non-existent window. Thankfully, the taxi driver that I had organised the previous evening had hung around for me, and although sweaty, smelly and flustered, things were back on track. So yeah, arrived at the airport with just about enough time to spare, and at this stage I was smelly, tired, but ultimately relieved. The check-in and security went well, and soon enough I was sat on the plane for the first leg of my journey. Doesn't say, oh yeah, I think I was coming from Durban at this stage, but yeah. So I sat in my seat by the window and got settled. The middle seat to my right was empty as well, so it was really, really nice and spread. Ah, time for a nice bit of sleep. No such luck. Behind me, there was a bit of commotion, probably just a domestic, I thought. Soon after the ruckus, a generous portion of man grumbled his way down into the aisle, brandishing the stub of his boarding pass, and started scanning back and forth, open mouthed with confusion as he's made his way down the plane. Of course he was coming my way. I could sense it. Of all of the empty seats, I knew that this guy was destined to be my own personal nuisance monger. Sure enough, down he parked into the seat right next to me. So after a moment of stress and trying to find comfort, he became passive, oozing his clammy arms over the rests that pressed into his flanks on either side. The noise of him grazing throughout the flight wasn't my issue. I remember this man so well because of the series of biological attacks that he released sporadically throughout the journey. Hot, soupy farts, so vivid and offensive to the palate that I could see people flinching on impact at least 6 rows ahead of us and looking around accusingly at one another. It was barbaric, unforgettable and unforgivable. I didn't sleep on the first flight, I was tired, hungry, and now, in addition to my body odour, I also boasted a smell of eau de anus infused into the fibres of my clothes, thanks to my flatulent travel companion. Like a zombie, in look, smell and temperament, I waited in Johannesburg for the next leg of the journey. The next flight was fine, everything was perfect, barring one moment where a bit of turbulence made me drop a saucy bit of food right down my front and onto my lap. I went into the bathroom and caught a glimpse of myself in the mirror. What a state. I did my best to have a little clean up in the sink, but my efforts were futile. All I managed to achieve was a large, unsightly water stain and additional moisture in my fringe. Yeah, we all had fringes back then. The fringe, which already was starting to adhere itself to my forehead. We landed. I was an absolute mess. I remembered that in my carry-on luggage, I had a bit of after-sun lotion. Maybe that will mask the scent. It smells a bit like plants. Surely that's an upgrade from the effluvia that I've drawn together. Whilst the plane taxied, I rubbed the after-sun into my face, neck, arms and legs. I know that for a fact someone else has me as the antagonist of their story of their journey. And then he started rubbing himself with Herbie lotion. What was wrong with that guy? Yeah, whoever you are, I'm sorry. But finally the journey was over. I stayed in my seat for a little bit so that everyone else could get off first. Why rush at this point? 2 more minutes won't kill you. I gathered my stuff together and stepped out of the plane. The sun was bright, hot and upsetting. I can't wait to get to my hostel, have a nice shower and then a well-earned sleep, I thought as I made my way down the stairs and across the tarmac into the terminal. A long line had formed at the doorway, which I was at the back of. We queued for a while. I remember the relief when I saw my bag on the luggage trolley heading to the terminal from the plane. 15 minutes or so later, the line reached a point where I was stood in the shade. Not long now, I had built up a fresh sheen of sweat from the blazing sun, and I remember feeling really unwieldy in my own body. I was swaying a bit and had a bit of an irregularity to my walk. Soon, it was just me left in the line. Ahead of me, the custom officials were looking. Oh, the customs official was talking to a guy that looked like a hybrid of a policeman and a military general. I took my passport out of my bag and approached. Things didn't feel right. I looked the dude in the eye and tried to replicate that blank serial killer stare that I had on my documentation. "What is your name?" he said in a low voice. "What is your name?" "What is your name?" he said. "Jack Tidball." There was a long pause. He didn't look happy with my answer. "Jack Elliot Tidball?" Again, he didn't look convinced. A large gent loomed up to me. It was at this point I knew I was in for some drama. Moments later, I was sat in a little brightly lit room. All that was inside was a wooden table, a couple of chairs, and I could see that my bag had been brought into the corner of the room. On the wall opposite was an ominous-looking cabinet. I didn't even want to consider what was inside. It reminded me a bit of that interrogation room in The Matrix when Keanu Reeves gets the metal squid thing puts in his belly button. I was suddenly hugely aware of my appearance as well, like stumbling about, squinting from the light, dirty, greasy, water-stained. Yeah, I not only smelt... not only smelt like a refuse site, but I had also helpfully covered myself in a lotion that smelt like a nondescript selection of potentially incriminating herbs. Hi, guys. Yeah, not an ideal situation. All that was running through my mind at this point was, I'm going to get the rubber glove. And if I didn't get the rubber glove, would they, well, would they use a rubber glove? That guy's hands were massive. What's inside the cabinet? Probably rubber gloves. Just to clarify, when I say get the rubber glove, I mean a full exploratory cavity procedure. Every cavity. Use your imagination. The bum hole. So the door opened and the army general police guy entered. Without a word, he went to the corner and purposefully unzipped a pocket of my bag. He reached in with the confidence as if it was his own and pulled out a red pouch. It was my first aid kit. Before travelling around Africa, I'd been advised to take a first aid kit that was a bit more comprehensive than a bit of antibacterial cream, plasters and some diarrhoea pills. Part of the kit was a sterile set of needles, just in case you go to a hospital in the middle of nowhere and you don't trust that the equipment is clean. Oh, I'd say more people. What is this? He asked with a calm authority, still standing. It's my first aid kit, just in case I get ill. I bought most of it in Boots, I replied like a schoolboy bitch. Boots? What do you mean, Boots? His expression told me that he wasn't familiar with the UK high street chemist, as I'd hoped that he'd be. It's a shop, and it sells first aid kits and stuff. Don't rubber glove me. Don't rubber glove me. Don't rubber glove me. Don't get the rubber glove. He was quiet for what seemed like an eternity whilst he thought. Usually at this stage in the story, I would try and be cool and blasé about what went down. I'd say something like, and then I pulled some money out of my pocket and bribed the guy to let me go on my way. Imagine that. Like, if I just pulled out money and tried to bribe him, he'd just laugh, take the money, rubber glove me for fun, and then set about putting me in a Zambian jail. But yeah, instead it went a little something like this. He finally sat in the chair that was across the table from me, and I spoke clearly and quietly. And he spoke clearly and quietly. If you give me some money, then you can go. English money. I've got US dollars. People like US dollars. It makes them feel like they're in the movies. He didn't say anything at this point, but I could see in his face that US dollars were right up his street. The question now was how much to go for. Too little, and he'd laugh, rob, glove and jail me. Too much, and I'm throwing money down the drain. But lucky for me, all of the US notes look really similar. And I had a mix of denominations, and the bigger ones were really well hidden in my bag. But again, in my mind was racing. How much did that bottle of water that I bought in the queue cost? Is that what a local would pay for a bottle of water? Surely not. I'm going to give 50 bottles worth. Maybe I can make some kind of commotion and get the police involved to come help me. Nah, this clearly happens all the time because he seems very well rehearsed. $50 isn't enough. Go for 60-ish. You've got two 20s, two 10s and some 1s. They'll, you know, look like loads all fanned out on the table. Oh, I'm definitely going to get gloved. He broke the silence. Give me $50. Okay. And that was it. Yeah, sorry for the anticlimax, but that was it. I never found out what was in that cupboard. I think I was probably one of the lucky ones. And after our chat, he returned the first aid kit to my bag and helped me put it on my back as I slid a $50 note neatly into his hand. I walked out, he had a quick word with the customs guy, stamped my passport, and then I was on my smelly way. I just want to add a disclaimer at this point. I'm sure this doesn't happen all of the time. But after my journey, I think I was just hyper susceptible to any scams. Maybe the whole thing was a legit procedure and I just had my thumb up my arse. Gloved, of course. But yeah, I was ready for the rest of my African adventure and what became one of the most beautiful experiences of my life, Victoria Falls. Instead of giving you a step-by-step account, here are some pictures that I took of the falls. I can't stress the beauty of the place enough. Please go and experience it for yourself. No picture will ever do it justice. Oh, right, and then there's no pictures. That's a shame. Yeah, maybe because I'm on my telephone and not on an actual computer. But yeah, well, thanks for listening, chum. Sorry about my reading skills. If you'd like to support the show, there is a link in the description below. The email is tidbitspod@protonmail.com. If you'd like to get involved, please do. Oh yeah, Oisin, who I mentioned earlier, is a co-host of an absolutely quality podcast called Adventure Boys. It's him and his mate Connor, who I've also had the pleasure of meeting, and he's an absolute gent. And yeah, each time they read one of those Choose Your Destiny, like sort of adventure books. You know the ones, like, you come to a fork in the road. If you turn, if you'd like to turn left, go to page 5. If you want to turn right, go to page 16. But trust me, do it now. Stop this tidbits marathon you're on and go and give them a listen. Adventure Boys. Yeah, I'll whack a link in the description so they're easy to find. And yeah, that's all for today. Thanks for stopping by. And catch you next time. See ya.